All right, we're in 2 Samuel chapter 13. We looked at basically verses 1 through 15 last week. It's the story of Amnon and Tamar. And we're going to look at verses, Lord willing, 16 through the end of the chapter today. So it's a big bite. We'll see if we can make it that far. And just by way of review, we'll look at the first part of the chapter. Could be summarized quickly in about three or four points, three or four sentences. The first thing we looked at was Amnon's fleshly lust. There's no other way to describe it other than fleshly lust. He, quote unquote, loved his sister Tamar. That's out of the way in and of itself. But he had a fleshly lust. And yet he didn't have the courage really to follow through on that, or couldn't see how to do that, but he had a friend. So then we looked at Amnon's friend and the importance of the friends that we have around us. Friends influence us. We learn from their example. They introduce us to things, good or bad, and they encourage us both towards the Lord and sometimes towards sin. And so we looked at Amnon's friend. We looked at Amnon's foolish decision. His decision was to listen to his friend's advice, to follow his advice. And we have that choice to make, but Amnon made a foolish decision, and then we ended up with Amnon's fleshly response. That would be in verse 15, then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. And Amnon said unto her, arise, be gone. Okay, what he had done to her was bad enough. Verse 14 says he forced her, and the word, I mean, we understand what it's been talking about there. The word literally means to humble her, okay? He forced himself upon her, and then verse 15 says that the hatred that he had was greater than the love he had had towards her, okay? That here's a case in point that fleshly lusts, even if you get what you think you want, it doesn't satisfy, okay? It's not what you thought it was. It's not what you really wanted. And he turned, as soon as he was done satisfying his lust, his affections, his desires turned to hatred towards Tamar. I mean, what he did was bad enough, then to turn around and be so cold as to say, get up and get out of here. If I were going to say it in vernacular, that's exactly what he said. Arise, be gone. Get up, get out of here. Okay? Verse 16. And she said unto him, there's no cause. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other thou didst unto me. But he would not hearken unto her. Then he called his servant that had ministered unto him and said, put now this woman out from me. Excuse me, I lost my place here. And bolt the door after her. That's just cold. Now you think the servant knew what was going on. Of course he did. Have all men out from me. He put two and two together and knew what was going on. He's a servant. Amnon's the son of the king. Okay? He did what he was told. So then he calls the servant to come in and says, put her out and lock the door. This is just cold. It's pure. It's, I'm going to get what I want and I could care less what happens to you. And, you know, that's the bottom line in any fleshly choice, is it not? You know, I want what I want and I don't care about the consequences. And see, bolt the door after her. Verse 18, she had a garment of diverse colors upon her, for with such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins appareled. Then his servant brought her out and bolted the door after her. And Tamar put ashes on her head and rent her garment of diverse colors that was on her and laid her hand on her head and went on crying. Where'd she get the ashes? That's the kind of stuff I wonder when I read this. Where'd she get the ashes? Maybe from the fire she just cooked the meal on? Maybe. I don't know. But nonetheless, she put ashes on her head and she rent her garment. You know, Joseph had a garment of many colors, of diverse colors. And this seems like a similar thing here. Each of the king's daughters that were virgins had a special garment that they wore. And then once they were married, then they would have different apparel. This was no doubt a gift from their father. And it was a special garment. Well, now she knows that that's been forcibly taken away from her. She rent her garment as a sign of grief and mourning, put ashes on her head, and went down the road crying. I mean, that's completely understandable, is it not? I mean, what did Tamar do wrong in this situation? Nothing. She did what her daddy told her to do, in innocence, not assuming anything. Okay? And now she has been humbled and abused by her half-brother. And now she recognizes the position she's in society. I mean, in that society, because she's no longer a virgin, nobody really wants her for a wife. Okay? And she realizes that her life has just been ruined. Everything's been taken away from her, and there's nothing she can do about it. She went down the road crying. Verse 20, Absalom, her brother, said unto her, "Hath Amnon, thy brother, been with thee?" Why did he ask that question? Why was that the first question out of his mouth? You know what? That just makes me wonder, was this the first time Amnon had done something like this? Okay? Chances are this wasn't the first time Amnon had done something like this. Okay? Chances are Amnon had forced himself before. Okay? Maybe he just kind of put two and two together. Maybe he knew that she went to Amnon's house and put two and two together. But nonetheless, the first question out of his mouth was, "Hath Amnon thy brother been with thee?" Okay? She probably was so distraught she couldn't even speak. There's no record of an answer. Probably, you know, a nodding of the head, look at him and start crying harder, that kind of thing. Then now he says this, "But hold now thy peace, my sister. He is thy brother. Regard not this thing." Whoa. Now, that sounds harsh, doesn't it? Sounds like, let's don't make a big deal out of this. He's your brother. Absalom's going to make a big deal out of it. Okay? It sounds harsh, but he's trying to comfort his sister. Okay? He's your brother. Let's hold now thy peace. Literally means make yourself be silent or just keep your mouth shut. You know, let's don't make a big issue out of this. Regard not this thing. The end of verse 20 is very telling. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. That's her condition now. So, she's desolate. So this section here, basically from verse 20 on to the end of the chapter, is David's fatal decision. David's fatal decision. Okay? Verse 20, Absalom figured out what was going on. So Tamar remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. Verse 21, "But when King David heard of all these things, he was very wroth. And Absalom spake unto his brother Amnon, neither good or evil or bad, for Absalom hated Amnon, because he had forced his sister Tamar." Did you see David's fatal decision? Okay. What was David's fatal decision? Do nothing. Exactly. By doing nothing, David made a fatal decision. Okay. And the fallout from that basically is the rest of this chapter. But we had Amnon's fleshly lust, Amnon's friend, Amnon's foolish decision, Amnon's fleshly response. And now we've got David's fatal decision. Right? The first thing we're going to see here is Tamar's reality. She's desolate. She remained desolate in her brother Absalom's house. Okay? That's all the record we have of Tamar. Her life's been ruined. Okay? She's mentioned in connection with Absalom killed Amnon because of his sister Tamar. Absalom named a daughter of his Tamar in honor of his sister. But her life's ruined. So Tamar's reality is she's desolate and she's living in her brother's house. David's reaction in verse 21 says, "When the King David heard of all these things, he was very wroth." The word wroth there means to burn. It's the idea of wroth or wrath. It has the idea of to burn. His anger was burning. It was hot. He got angry. And this kind of a sin should have angered him, should it not? This is the kind of thing that should have brought up a righteous indignation. Not in the sense that, boy, you've embarrassed me and now you're going to pay for it. But the fact that this was done should have brought an anger that the law of God had been violated. So in that sense, an anger was justified, a wrath, and David's anger was burning. That's it. That's all it was said. He was upset. And he did nothing about it. Why? Why? Well, there's multiple reasons. It seems like David had a soft spot for his kids. All right, that's not a bad thing. You ought to love your kids. Okay? Your kids ought to be able to get you to do stuff that the neighbor kids can't get you to do. Okay? Having a soft spot for your kids is a good thing. But having a soft spot in the sense that, well, I love them too much to discipline them, is harmful to that child. Okay? Guess what? It's harmful to us as adults. If somebody says, I love them too much to, you know, he's my friend, I can't speak up and say something, that's not love. That's love of self. You know, I don't really want to make waves and rock the boat here, but David had a soft spot for his kids. And it seems like when it came to discipline here, he has a blind spot. He couldn't bring himself to judge his kids. The Septuagint adds a phrase in here that he didn't want to discipline Amnon. That's not in the Bible. That's somebody's guess. Okay? But maybe it was because he had a hard time disciplining his kids. But you know, there's another very big reason why David may have felt a little paralysis here. Because of David's own sin. Okay? Your guilt and my guilt, if I know I am guilty of something, it causes us to fail to act in another area. I mean, guilt robs you of boldness. It robs you of, the worldly term sometimes is moral authority. He lacks the moral authority to deal with this thing. I mean, I'll give you a for instance. When Bill Clinton was in the White House and behaved himself lewdly, okay, that emboldened others to act lewdly, and he couldn't speak up and say anything. It's like, you do the same thing. That's what I'm saying. That at times we feel like that, okay, I don't have any room to talk here. And David is guilty of this very sin. What had just happened here? I mean, David had killed, over Bathsheba, he had killed Uriah. Okay? So he's guilty of adultery and of murder. And so now, if he's going to speak up, he knows his son's going to throw it back in his face. I mean, that's why it's important for us as parents to maintain a good testimony. Okay? It's also important for us to admit if we've messed up, because our kids already know. And this isn't new news. Okay? It's not like Amnon and Absalom and all the rest of the kids didn't know what had happened. What I want us to understand here is just because David had sinned does not mean that he shouldn't have done anything about it. Okay? Let's follow that line of logic out a little bit. If only perfect people were allowed to act in certain circumstances, no priest would have ever offered a sacrifice. No one could have been made a judge in Israel to judge between two brothers in a matter because they were sinners and they were faulty. I mean, if the standard is perfection, then you're never going to have a priest. You're never going to have a judge. Parents, because we have to acknowledge that we're sinners, would never chasten our children, right? Well, I'm a sinner too, so I guess I can't punish him. And, you know, we could follow that line of logic all the way down the line. I mean, that was interesting to me. Spent a week and a half ago now that things became public that an independent Baptist preacher who's very well known in certain circles up in Indiana was exposed for immorality with a teenage girl. Okay? Now, I think that there's a parallel here because the previous pastor, who's also his father-in-law, was accused of the similar type sin and then it's carried on in the ministry. But there's also a parallel in this aspect. I watched some of the news clips from Indiana and Chicago television stations. And there's this college-age kid they interviewed. And this is what the kid said. Well, the Bible says in Romans 3:23, for all sin come short of the glory of God. There's none righteous, no, not one. We're all sinners. He was excusing the sin of this pastor based on the fact that we're all sinners. Okay, wrong answer. Okay? A recognition that I'm a sinner should moderate how I respond. Okay? It should keep me from a holier-than-thou response. Okay? But the fact that I'm a sinner doesn't mean that I should never discipline my children. or deal with anything that's under my area of responsibility. You see, if the standard is perfection, then none of us would ever do anything. Okay? That's a flawed line of thinking to say, well, because I've done that, then I guess I can't judge them for it. On the same token, James 2:13 says, he shall have judgment without mercy that showed no mercy. So if I go on a rampage and I never show any mercy, never show any compassion at all, God's going to deal with me the same way. What am I saying? What I'm saying is that in this kind of a situation, it requires a broad understanding of the principles of the Word of God. Okay? There's not just one. See, some people want to say, let he that is without sin among you cast the first stone. Okay? That is not a principle that applies to every area of life. Or else, like I said, no judge would ever be able to pass judgment. No parent should ever discipline their children because we're not without sin, therefore we shouldn't cast stones, right? Okay? That requires a broad understanding. Let me give you a Bible example of what I'm talking about. In the Gospels, when Jesus was being crucified, Peter stood there at the fire and said, I don't know him, I don't know him, I don't know him. He denied Christ three times. Okay? Now, he went out and wept bitterly. Jesus said, feed my sheep, feed my sheep, feed my sheep. Okay? But it was well known. It's recorded in the Bible for everybody to read. Peter denied the Lord. Okay? Peter lied. All right? So now let's fast forward to Acts chapter 5. Ananias and Sapphira have agreed together to lie about their offering that they're going to bring. So now Peter's standing there. Based on that logic, we should say, well, Peter shouldn't cast a stone. But that's not what happened. Peter said, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Ghost? You're lying, the Holy Spirit knows it, and God is exposing your sin. Okay? There's a Bible example. Peter's been guilty. He's been forgiven, but that doesn't mean he should never bring that to light in another situation. David, even though he was guilty, had a direct word from the prophet of God saying, the Lord has passed over your sin, has covered, forgiven your sin, you'll not die. Okay? But that did not excuse David from dealing with this situation. One man said it this way, a child that does not at the proper time feel the father's rod becomes at last a rod for his father. That's one man's statement of the term that if we spare the rod, we spoil the child. And a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. That's what it means. A father who does not put the rod at the proper time to his child is going to have that child turn around and be a rod to him later. And that's what's happening in David here. And it's going to happen again when Absalom rebels against him. Hebrews 12:11, now no chastening for the present seemeth joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward, it yieldeth the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. It's not fun. It was not going to be fun for David to have to confront Amnon over what happened. It's never fun. It should never be fun. If we as parents or as people in authority enjoy those kind of situations, we got an attitude problem. Okay, but nonetheless, if we avoid it because it's going to be hard, we got a sin problem because I'm failing in my responsibility. The fact that David refused to confront Amnon did not demonstrate love. It demonstrated cowardice, and David loved himself more. And if you think that somebody putting their finger in your face and saying, brother, I love you, but this is wrong, if you think that's hatred or not being a friend or in any way an attack, you don't have a Bible perspective. A biblical perspective is that if a man be overtaken in fault, you which are spiritual restore such a one. That in fact, biblical confrontation is Bible love. David failed to demonstrate that here by just allowing it to go. His response was, he was very wroth. And then he did nothing else. So, you see, Tamar's reality, David's reaction, he got angry. David's response, he did nothing. So now we're going to see Absalom's revenge. Verse 22, Absalom spake unto his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he'd forced his sister Tamar. And it came to pass after 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shears in Baal-Hazor, which is beside Ephraim. And Absalom invited all the king's sons, And Absalom came to the king and said, "Behold now, thy servant hath sheep shears. Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant." And the king said to Absalom, "Nay, my son, let us not all now go, lest we be chargeable unto thee." And he pressed him. Howbeit, he would not go, but he blessed him. And Absalom said, "If not, I pray thee, let my brother Amnon go with us." And the king said unto him, "Why should he go with thee?" But Absalom pressed him that he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. I don't remember where I heard it or read it, but some secular source, I'm sure, said that revenge is a dish best served cold. Well, that's basically what's happened. It appears that all the hot feelings around this have gone cold. But understand, that's not Bible, what I just said. That is a human, carnal, fleshly perspective. Okay? But that's what Absalom is doing. David's failure to act allowed this root of bitterness to fester and grow in Absalom's heart. Now, Absalom, in comforting Tamar, he may have said, "Let's just wait a little bit. Dad will take care of it. Let's see what Dad does." All right? Days, weeks, now are turning into months. Dad's not done anything. Okay? Now, Absalom and Tamar are brother and sister. Do you remember who their mother was? Maacah, the son of Talmai, king of Geshur. All right? I didn't expect any of you to know that. Okay? But the point is, their mother was, from a Hebrew perspective, a heathen, a pagan, and was not an Israelite. Okay? So from that sense, they could feel like they were outsiders. Now, David, I think, was feeling a little bit of paralysis because of his own sin. But nonetheless, as they're talking about it, I wonder why Dad hadn't done anything. You know why? It's because we don't have a Hebrew mother. You know? If this was so-and-so, David would have done something already, but their mom's a Hebrew. And their mom, you understand, these are the kinds of problems that are created by polygamy, by these multiple wives and all this kind of a situation. But they could very easily say, you know, we're half-breeds, we're foreigners, that's why David doesn't love us, that's why he's not doing anything about it. Now, is that true? No. But it doesn't have to be true for somebody to be bitter about it. Okay? There's lots and lots of bitterness over misunderstandings and out misinterpretations. They want to be bitter, so now I'm going to find a reason. So Absalom is allowing this thing to fester. And he says he hated Amnon because he'd forced his sister. Okay? This is a settled thing in his heart. This is a perfect illustration of 1 John 3:15. He that hateth his brother is a murderer. That's exact. Amnon in his mind is already dead to Absalom. Just a matter of time. Hatred harbors ill will in the heart and doesn't confront. Biblical confrontation desires restoration. Hatred desires revenge and pain. And here, Absalom is not seeking justice. He's seeking revenge. He begins to plot. Now, it came to pass after 2 full years. We know from what we've read about David that David's temperament is very emotional. We see that in the Psalms. That also makes us tend to think that David was the kind that would respond quickly. Okay? Well, it's been 2 years and he hasn't responded quickly, but he may also expect that of Absalom. All right? It's been a while. You know, obviously there's some tensions, but things have died down. It seems like everything's smooth. I think this thing has passed over. I think everything's gone away. But Absalom is just biding his time. Biding his time. Biding his time. Came to pass after 2 full years, Absalom had sheep shears in Baal Hazor, which is beside Ephraim. And Absalom invited all the king's sons and the king. Okay? You remember we learned in 1 Samuel 25 in the story of Nabal that sheep shearing is a time of festival. It's something like we think about it, Thanksgiving or Christmas. It's a big feast time. It's, you know, a rejoicing time. You shear sheep, they'd kill a couple of them, barbecue them, you know, and it's a feast time. Well, it was about that time, and here it looks like Absalom had a piece of property. He had a place of his own, and it, you know, maybe his dad had said, "Son, you need to learn how to manage things." He gave him a piece of property. He gave him some cattle to get started with, and he said, "All right, now you manage it. You manage the sheep. You manage the farm. You learn to take care of these things." And so Absalom's got his own property here, and he's trying to be generous, or at least to appear generous. And in the circles of royalty, I only know what I've read. Okay, none of us are in those circles. But in the circles of royalty and high society, it's important to impress people, right? Okay, and it's important to be, you know, have people, the right people come to your little events and so forth. And that may be what it looks like Absalom's doing here. He's invited all the king's sons and the king. Now, he put David off guard, verse 24, when he said, "Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant." If he's inviting dad, it looks like an innocent thing, right? You don't generally invite mom and dad if you're trying to get away with something. Okay? Unless you're really arrogant or really foolish. Okay? But he invites dad. So it looks like it's on the up and up. No. That would be too much expense for you, son. You can't afford to feed me and all of my entourage. And so then, verse 26, Absalom said, "If not, I pray thee, let my brother Amnon go with us." All right, that should have been red flag. Ding, hello, something weird here. And David said, no, we don't need to do that. It says, and he pressed him, howbeit he would not go, but he blessed him. All right, verse 27, again, Absalom pressed him. The word pressed there means to break through. Like you're going to push until you push through. And the idea is that the kid here wore dad down. Dad, please. All right, fine. Okay? Context is very much important there. Okay? There's sometimes it may be a good thing to be kind to your kid. There's some areas where it's a very bad thing to give in because you got worn down. Okay? In this case, it was a bad thing. But Absalom pressed him. He wore him down. He finally said, "All right, fine. Okay, go." David here is participating in his own punishment by this decision. Why he didn't see it, don't know. He had a blind spot regarding his kids. So we got Absalom's revenge. And we see the next step of that. First of all, he had to get David to agree. Now he's going to carry out the action. Verse 28. Absalom had commanded his servant, saying, "Mark ye now when Amnon's heart is merry with wine." Now, is this just saying that he was going to try to get him drunk? Was this saying that he knew Amnon liked to drink a lot? Yeah, probably both. He's going to use Amnon's weaknesses against him. "And when I say unto you, smite Amnon, then kill him. Fear not. Have not I commanded thee? Be courageous and be valiant." Okay? What Amnon did was a clear violation of the law of God. Leviticus 20:17. "If any man take his sister, his father's daughter, or his mother's daughter, and see her nakedness, and she see his nakedness, it is a wicked thing. They shall be cut off in the sight of their people. He hath uncovered his sister's nakedness." What Amnon had done was wickedness, and it was a clear violation of the law of God. But that doesn't mean that Absalom was justified in breaking a clear law of God here in revenge. Okay? Two wrongs don't make a right. I don't know how many times my mom told me that. Two wrongs don't make a right. Okay? Just because they were wrong doesn't mean it's okay for you to respond in a wrong way. Here, what Amnon had done was wrong. But what Absalom's getting ready to do is also wrong. David, by failing to punish Amnon, has failed in three areas. He failed in his responsibility as a father. He failed in his responsibility as a judge to enforce the divine law, which we just read, and he failed in his responsibility as king to be the civil judge. Okay? In his personal life, in his spiritual life, and in his civil responsibilities, David failed in three areas. So, Absalom could say he's been wronged three ways, but that does not justify what he's getting ready to do. Nonetheless, he said, "Be of good courage, don't worry about it." You know, he understands that his servants have inhibitions, and he's pushing them beyond those reservations. "When I tell you to kill Amnon, you kill Amnon." Verse 29, "The servants of Absalom did unto Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and every man gat him up on his mule and fled. And it came to pass while they were in the way that tidings came to David, saying, Absalom hath slain all the king's sons, and there's not one of them left. Then the king arose and tore his garments and lay on the earth, and all his servants stood by with their clothes rent." We see here now Absalom's revenge, David's regret. Okay? Absalom's revenge was very focused. He was going to kill Amnon because of what he did to his sister. All right. Now, he had a setup there. He could have killed all the king's sons if he wanted to. That wasn't his focus. His focus was at this time was purely revenge for his sister. He killed Amnon. He had his servants kill Amnon. Then all the king's sons get up and run. Now notice, the first report, is it always accurate? Breaking news, breaking news. You don't always have all the details. Okay? I mean, you think about major events that have happened. You know, do we always have, does the breaking news report always 100% accurate? No. The news anchors to cover themselves say this is a very fluid situation. In other words, we have no idea what's going on. We're just trying to be first. A lot of times that's all they care about. But here, the first report was not accurate. The first report was Absalom killed all the king's sons and there's not one of them left alive. All right? Yeah, that's going to be some David's regret. He falls, verse 31, he tears his garments and lay on the earth. Okay? He falls down sobbing uncontrollably. Okay, wouldn't you? I mean, think about it. All of his sons have been murdered by one of his other sons. That's a horrible, horrible situation to try to wrap your mind around. Okay? And then David has, on top of that, to understand, it's my fault. I let him go. Why didn't I see this coming? Yeah, we want to know the same thing. David, why couldn't you see this? But the first report was not necessarily accurate. Notice verse 32. And Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother, answered and said, where have we met this character before? Back up in verse number 3. Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. Jonadab was very subtle apart. The word means wise, cunning. Okay? This is the same character. He's a cousin. He's the son of David's brother, so he's a cousin to all of David's sons. He's around the royal house. Now, if he's Amnon's friend, why didn't he go with him?
I don't know.
Okay? Why is he in the king's court? That's a question that bugs me. Okay, this character's hanging around the king's court. He's wormed his way into the good graces of the king and the right people, but he is a snake. And Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, answered and said, let not my lord suppose that they've slain all the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon only is dead. For by the appointment of Absalom, this hath been determined from the day that he forced his sister Tamar. The appointment of Absalom means the mouth of Absalom. You know, from Absalom's mouth, this was determined out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. Okay? Where did he figure that out? Maybe he watched Absalom. Okay? He knew the scenario. He knew both of them. But this guy should have been executed for treason. Okay? But he whose idea was this whole scenario so that Amnon could rape Tamar to start with? It was Jonadab's idea. Now, when Jonadab recognizes the potential that, all right, this meal, this is bad news, why didn't he say something? Where was Jonadab's loyalty? To Jonadab. That was the only person to whom Jonadab was loyal was Jonadab. Okay? If that's the case, then he was not a true friend. Amnon had a friend. You should put that word in quotes. He wasn't a true friend if his only loyalty was to himself. If he had any true friendship feelings toward Amnon, he'd have warned him. He'd have told him not to go. But Jonadab was loyal to Jonadab. And so he's the only one in the room that spoke up. Why? Partly because of his guilty conscience. He knew what was going on. Verse 33, now therefore let not my lord the king take the thing to his heart to think that all the king's sons are dead, for Amnon only is dead. All right. Then we've got a parenthetical here. But Absalom fled. We can really drop that down to verse 37. This is kind of like real time, where we're going to cut over here to this scene, and we're going to cut over here to this scene, and we're going to cut back over here. All right. Amnon's killed. All the king's sons make a run for it. They get on their mule, and they take off. A messenger got back faster than they did and said, all the king's sons are dead, all the king's sons are dead. He had breaking news, it just wasn't accurate. But, so now David's, you know, in grief. At the same time, after Amnon is dead and the kill's been verified, Absalom takes off and runs the other direction. Okay? So while Absalom's running this way, the king's sons are running this way back to the royal city, And so Absalom fled, verse 34, and the young man that kept the watch lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there came much people by the way of the hillside behind him. And Jonadab said unto the king, behold, the king's son's come, as thy servant said, so it is. Don't they just want to smack his little smug mouth? Say, I told you so. Here come the king's sons. This guy needs to go. Anyway, and it came to pass, as soon as he made an end of speaking, that behold, the king's sons came and lifted up their voice and wept. And the king also and all his servants wept sore. Okay? The king's sons return. Okay? There's some tears of relief that the rest of them are okay. And there's tears of great grief and sorrow and sadness because Amnon is dead. Okay? Let's not pass over that fact. David's son has been murdered. And this is paycheck number two of four. Remember, he's going to pay fourfold. The first was the son of Bathsheba died. Paycheck number two, Amnon died. Paycheck number three, Absalom. Payment number four is going to be Adonijah just after David's death. But David gave the kill order before he died. Okay, but here, David has lost a son, and he knows it's partly the judgment for his own sin. Just try to imagine that grief. Try to put yourself in that spot. It's my fault. And then he's got to try to comfort his other sons and comfort his wife. And, you know, now everybody's uptight and they're tense and nobody in his house trusts anybody and everybody's suspicious of everybody. And his house is not a peaceful place. His house is in turmoil. Okay? Another aspect of the judgment. So we have David's regret. But then I want you to see here the last thing about David's fatal decision is we have here the seeds of rebellion. At this point, Absalom's focus was just simply revenge for his sister Tamar. Verse 34, the first phrase, but Absalom fled. Verse 37, but Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Amihud, king of Geshur. Okay? And David mourned for his son every day. Okay? Why did Absalom go to Talmai, king of Geshur? What was the relationship between Absalom and Talmai? Grandpa. You go back to 2 Samuel 3, it says that 2 Samuel 3, 2 and 3 tells us that Absalom's mother was Maacah, the daughter of Talmai. Okay? This is his grandpa. Okay? He went to grandpa on his mom's side for protection. Okay? So, how long was he there? Verse 38, Absalom fled, went to Geshur, and was there 3 years. Okay? Now, grandpa on his mom's side, so it's his granddaughter that got raped. Who's grandpa going to side with? He's going to side with Absalom and Tamar. Right, wrong, doesn't matter. You know, David is a rival king. He's not interested in doing anything to prop up David. So, for 3 years, Absalom stayed over there with grandpa. And the seeds of the rebellion that ended up happening were sown and began to fester here. Okay? That guy didn't deserve to be king. Now, you remember we also said who was the firstborn son of David? Amnon. We find that in 2 Samuel 3, 2 and 3. You got Amnon, then you got Chileab, and then you got Absalom. That place right there in 2 Samuel 2 and 3 is the only place you ever find Chileab's name. He must have died young somehow. He's never mentioned again. Okay? Which means that the only older son was Amnon. If Absalom takes out Amnon, not only does he get revenge, now he's next in line for the throne. Okay? And don't you think Grandpa's reinforcing that while he's over there? I do. And he stayed over there 3 years. Verse 38, Absalom fled and went to Geshur, was there 3 years. Verse 39, the soul of King David longed to go forth unto Absalom, for he was comforted concerning Amnon, seeing he was dead. One man said it this way, that the hand of time had wiped away the tears of David. It has a way of doing that to a point. Okay? Not completely. But David wept for his son, mourned for his son every day. How long? Don't know. Long time. Okay? But over time, he finally got over some of that grief for Amnon, and now there's some fatherly heart towards Absalom. Now, this is a weird situation. It just is. I mean, if you're familiar with chapter 14, Joab sees that David kind of wants to bring Absalom back, but that Joab has to resort to trickery to make it happen. Right? And then when he comes back, he doesn't see David face to face for a long time. Okay? So his heart longed to go forth unto Absalom, and yet when Absalom came back, things were still weird. Okay? This is a weird situation. Okay? But David, again, his soul longed to go forth unto Absalom. His fatherly affection towards Absalom was feeling some warmth again. Okay? Again, here's another failure of David. This is another aspect of his fatal decision. What should have happened to Absalom? What sentence should he have received? The death penalty. Okay? If this was not first degree, calculated, premeditated murder, nothing in the history of the world ever was. Okay? This was first degree murder in our terminology, premeditated murder, and Absalom is worthy of death. He could have sent his soldiers and an official envoy down there to say, give us Absalom, we want him extradited for trial, is our terminology today. We want to put him back on trial for what he's done. He never did that. So he failed to judge Amnon, which fostered the root of bitterness of Absalom. And then when Absalom sinned, he failed to judge Absalom. What message is he sending the rest of his kids? Okay? Do whatever you want. Daddy's not going to do anything about it. That's the message that he's sending. So here again, this blind spot David has towards his sons is carried out. We'll let that run. David made a fatal decision. His fatal decision was to do nothing. He did nothing to Amnon. He did nothing to Absalom. And it caused the rebellion of his son. It caused the loss of respect among the people, you know, that were under David. It caused more strife in his family. Ultimately, this was the seeds of the humiliation of 10 of his concubines when Absalom took the house. Okay? David thought he was being compassionate by doing nothing. What did he, in the end, what did he do? He caused himself a great deal more problems because he refused to do what he should have done. He failed in his responsibility as a father. He failed in his responsibility as a spiritual leader. He failed in his responsibility as a civil judge. And by doing that, this compassion, quote unquote, in reality, caused more problems because he wouldn't deal with the sin in his own family. David's failed decision, Tamar's reality, David's reaction, David's response, Absalom's revenge, David's regret, and we see the seeds of Absalom's rebellion. Okay, the answer to I've messed up is not more wrong decisions. The answer is repentance and then deal with it biblically.